This episode is brought to you in part by Reliance AI. Reliance AI streamlines privacy, data protection, and AI governance on one platform with advanced AI for live data mapping, processing activity records, and more. Visit reliance.ai, that's R-E-L-Y-A-N-C-E.ai. It's in the code. Welcome back to another episode of Data Protection Gumbo, and I am your host, Demetrius Malbro, and today we are going to have a fantastic conversation around decentralized compute, immutability, and blockchain, and we're going to tap the brain of Stefan Vervaat, who is the CEO at Akave.ai. So, Stefan, welcome to the Gumbo. How are you?
Good. Thanks for inviting me, Demetrius.
Absolutely. The elephant in the room, what is Akave.ai? So start off by explaining that and then a little bit around how you got into blockchain-enabled infrastructure as well.
Yeah. So Akave.ai is an L2 storage layer. So we provide storage with an object storage interface that is powered by blockchain and gives users the ability to bring their assets on chain and, you know, manage basically data lakes on chain, which is interesting for decentralized AI use cases, but also for traditional backup, archive, very heavy, you know, compliance or heavily regulated environments where you have to prove that data integrity was maintained, immutability was enforced, all these cool features that come native with blockchain. So yeah, that's what we're focusing on. Personally, I got into this space a little bit over 3 years ago. I started with Protocol Labs as the head of network growth, where Protocol Labs is the founder of IPFS. For those who don't know, it's a distributed content addressable storage layer that's very widely used in blockchain by blockchain builders, primarily focused on storing data in a different way, storing data in a way that is mapped to the actual content through cryptographic hashes. And we also built Filecoin. Filecoin is the largest decentralized storage stack. And so as part of that team, what we saw was a need for, you know, this decentralized object layer powered by blockchain that today is called Akave. Okay. And before that, I've been in storage and data protection for 20 years. I did a startup back in the day, 2000, and kind of dates me, where we focused on deduplication. We were one of the first deduplication technologies, and we got eventually sold. Data Center Technologies was a startup out of Belgium. Okay. Back in the day, you know, you had Avamar and Data Center Technologies. Data Center Technologies got sold to Veritas, which became Pure Disk, part of the NetBackup portfolio. And then Avamar got sold to EMC, and then Data Domain got sold to EMC as well eventually. But at the time, it was a very unique concept to use cryptographic hash or cryptography basically to reduce and optimize your backup capacity, you know, just by deduping the data. Right. And then after that, I moved to the US. I'm originally from Belgium and worked for Veritas as a product manager. And then my buddies called me back up from Belgium and said, hey, we've got another startup. This time it's cryptographic hashes to optimize data protection, like using erasure coding in software to scale out an object store on premises across multiple data centers. And we're competing against Amazon, Google, Microsoft. Basically, it was primarily Amazon at the time. So distributed object storage and powered by erasure coding technology. We got investment from Intel. Intel helped us. So then we sold that company to Western Digital and stayed at Western Digital for a few years and then moved into blockchain and crypto.
That's a very decorated past in history. And so there were quite a few things running through my mind because we walk a similar path when it comes to backup and recovery and data protection. And I remember deduplication and when it first came out, it was the big thing around being able to get all these efficiencies and 10 to 1 and 50 to 1 and 80 to 1. It was a battle as to who had the best dedupe ratio and all those different types of things. I remember EMC had a campaign, Tape is Dead. And yeah. Looks like they
it's
may
still
have,
not that.
They may have lost. They lost that battle. and for that part, mainframe is not even dead, right? I just read a post about mainframe is still strong and kicking because it's how beefy of a system to process, you know, tons and billions of records, especially for like financial institutions and anyone who's really crunching large EDS volumes of information. But yeah, I appreciate you explaining that, and your background is pretty interesting as well. And it also pays to have that think about you when they start to build something new and they call you up and say, hey, we thought about you. You want to come start this company with us? So that's the power of a network. And I think we all should aspire to have a network that we can rely on in order to gain from that perspective. So hats off to you on that. And how long has Akave been around? 3 years, you said?
No, Akave has been around since this year. So it's still early days. Yeah. It's been in development. We've been working on it for over a year. So we started the work at Protocol Labs. Protocol Labs is a research lab, and you know, we have multiple products that we've been building on. And this is one that's kind of spun out of Protocol Labs that I'm leading, predominantly because, you know, there's a clear product market fit. Users are struggling with egress costs. I mean, how many times I hear that? You know, I remember like you were saying, right? Back in the day, Dedup was coming up, and then the cloud came up. And then I remember vivid conversations where customers would tell me, like, I will never move my data to the cloud. You know, you'd be stupid to like move your data assets into your precious assets into a cloud. But then it became so easy, obviously. And now you see what happened. The cloud kind of is dominating the infrastructure in general. And so now we're seeing more users either, you know, they felt the pain. They really felt the vendor lock-in pain. And it's not like, in my opinion, users will move away or completely move out of cloud. It's more certain use cases. You want to de-risk some of the control that the cloud vendors have by moving a second copy in a different, completely different environment. Or, you know, there's regulation or, you know, certain requirements for you to store it in a certain, you know, off-premise data center. And those are all opportunities now that could come up and where we can help users with.
Got it. And decentralized versus centralized. And explain that to the gumbo listeners. So centralized cloud and decentralized cloud. I think I have an answer for that, but I want to hear how you explain that.
Yeah. So decentralized means that there's no central entity or single entity that has full control of the network, because in a centralized solution, you kind of trust the party that you're dealing with, meaning you're signing a contract directly with one entity. In a decentralized environment, you have multiple entities coming together, building a network of, in this case, infrastructure that you can choose from as a customer. And that network is run by software that is open source. And there's an algorithm that defines how those providers are able to contribute hardware resources to the network. And there is no central entity that has control over how these parameters can change. And so the benefit here with a decentralized environment is that, one, users have more options to choose from. So if they want to choose from a storage provider in a local environment where there is no, or local area where there is no Amazon or Google presence, you can choose from that. Second, typically lower cost because there's more competition. Third, you have lower egress costs because some of these providers will not charge for that. And then fourth is like the ability to innovate. So there's a ton of functionality that comes with, one, open source, but more importantly, blockchain powered infrastructure. And, you know, some of these benefits are that you can build new business models. Now, this may be a big word, but to give you an example, when you choose a certain storage offering from a cloud provider or a local provider, you're going with the offering as it exists, where in a blockchain-enabled network, you actually have more choice. You can, you know, negotiate your egress costs, or you can find a provider that gives you maybe a higher redundancy for a lower performance, or it gives you, you know, a lower egress cost for a higher redundancy. There's all these things that you can optimize for because it's done on a deal level or on a data set level, not on a, you know, infrastructure, like on an entity level. And so it opens up a whole new world of possibilities. You know, obviously we see a ton more users interested in archiving their data sets and backing up and protecting their data sets on a decentralized storage network because of the native immutability, the native daily verifications that are done on-chain, meaning you can point to an on-chain reference that your data's integrity is still maintained and was mm-hmm. verified every 24 hours. And that's super important. Definitely, if you look at what's happening today with, you know, all these cyber attacks, and we've kind of seen the, you know, like the data policy, the data protection practices have adjusted to accommodate cybersecurity insurance requirements. In this case, you know, we've kind of moved from this 3-2-1 concept to 3-2-1-1, right? Mm-hmm. So with one, mm-hmm. the last one being like an immutable off-premises copy. Well, imagine, you know, in this decentralized storage network, every single file you store is immutable. And meaning it's an object that is represented by a cryptographic hash on chain. And so it gets verified every single day and it's stored in an immutable fashion. And so the benefits there is that you can now move around the mutable copies. You're not really locked with one provider. And that's all done through a data management stack like a Kaveh that mm-hmm. allows you then to create multiple copies of these immutable entities. And so there's a lot more flexibility. And then moving forward, you know, there's all these opportunities to monetize your data as well. And, you know, there we see completely new trends. We can talk about, you know, the trends we're seeing. And maybe kind of the second a little bit.
And before we talk about the trends, I was looking at something around California. DMV puts 42 million car titles on blockchain to fight fraud. Not sure if you saw that or not.
No, that's amazing.
That just came out. Yeah, it just came out yesterday. And they've digitized 42 million car titles using blockchain technology in a bid to detect fraud and smoothen the title transfer process. And I just thought that was really interesting. But I think that's a huge step if you have the whole state of California moving to digitize 42 million car titles and put them on the blockchain. That's a step in the right direction, I would say, as far as advancing and embracing blockchain technology. What are your thoughts on that?
That's amazing. Yeah, I think it's in line with what we're seeing. So maybe this ties back very well into the trend. So last year, when this new AI wave, right, actually started, it kind of changed the belief system that with people that, or with businesses, that if they don't monetize or if they don't, you know, see how much their data sets are valuable or what they can actually mine, what kind of insights they can mine from their data sets, if they don't do it, their competitors will. And so it's become like this requirement, and you're seeing a ton more businesses looking at how can I secure my data sets and how do I, like, you know, run these new LLM models and identify opportunities there to innovate and differentiate myself from my competitors. Second to that is that with that, there's a lot of businesses that are looking at, you know, the first step is like, you know, bringing their data sets on chain to be able to do that. And so this is an example of a use case where, you know, they're actually bringing those data sets on chain because they know that they need clean data sets. They need, you know, the actual data sets that they can trust before they can even go down the path of monetizing them, or in this case, like making sure that there's no fraud committed, because, you know, I can imagine there's a lot of fake driver license out there. So we're seeing a trend predominantly driven by now this ability with these new LLMs to actually do a lot more with it. And then there's this other angle where data accuracy, right, is super important to be able to successfully execute on that. And for that to happen, you need to bring your data sets on chain. And what that means, bringing data sets on chain, is like what you just described. Mm-hmm. It is not necessarily taking these files and, you know, storing these files somewhere in a ledger. No, you're actually indexing your files, and these cryptographic hashes that represent those files are indexed on chain because that's a lot smaller to store and feasible to then distribute in a decentralized ledger. But the actual physical copies are stored locally, or not locally, but they could be stored locally with one of the storage providers that's contributing to this decentralized network, or it could be stored multiple copies with different storage providers for protection. The point is that these cryptographic hashes that are stored on chain can guarantee that your data is still maintained and you know, you have proof that the data is stored. There's a whole complex algorithm behind it that kind of validates that and enforces that with the providers. And if they don't do it, they will lose money. So there's there's clear consequences if you contribute to the network as an actual like managed service provider and you don't adhere to the requirements, you're actually going to be penalized. And the typical requirements are you have to be able to prove on a daily basis that the data that was stored with you in your data center is still there. And you do that by verifying those cryptographic hashes. And you have to submit those hashes within a certain time frame to prove that you actually have the data. Mm-hmm. You're able to reconstruct the hashes and they are the same as the hashes that were stored on chain.
And who are you submitting? Who are you submitting those hashes to?
This is the interesting part. Like, who is not a person? Who is not an entity? Who is this decentralized network of data validators or validator nodes that validate in a completely decentralized, orchestrated way, independent from any single entity? So it's not like one person can take over because you have more than 3,000. I think we have more than 3,000 systems, 3,000 entities out there that are contributing to this. And so you would have to take over more than 50% of that network. And the network currently has 6 exabytes on chain. So, and you know, there's still a lot of capacities. It's like 2 exabyte of data stored in a 6 exabyte network. And this is Filecoin that I'm talking about right now.
Okay.
And yeah. And so that is the largest decentralized, I would say, community powered network. And these providers can size from, you know, a couple of 100 terabytes to tens of petabytes. And the way to access it is through, you know, L2s or through on-ramps like Akave that provide a simple object-like interface, S3 compatible. Mm-hmm. So you can easily point your, you know, your Veeam or your, you know, any data protection, you know, application today. It speaks S3. So that was sort of like what we've seen from customers is that they want a similar like cloud-like experience, but the benefits you're getting are, you know, up to 80%, a lower cost. It kind of depends from configuration to configuration, but you also get all this extra functionality that you can unlock if you're interested in doing that by, you know, interacting with your data on chain. And that's just a whole other ecosystem that's now growing. And what I mean by that is this is more Web3, as we call it, right? The Web3 world. We're seeing a lot of developments in Web3. And so if I draw parallels to what happened in the past, I see we're basically at a very similar point in time as we were back in 2006 to 2010, where Amazon came out with the S3 interface, you know, new object interfaces came out, cloud services came out. Yeah. And so you saw this, like, you know, Dropbox started to deploy on Amazon, and they were still small companies. And so there's all these cloud native apps that were being built and slowly growing. And then you had eventually the enterprise years later came into the cloud as well. But the point is, we're at this phase where we're seeing a lot of crypto natives that are building real dApps. You know, we're seeing competitors to Spotify, competitors to YouTube, competitors to Hugging Face. I mean, everything that you can imagine that exists in Web2 is being sort of rebuilt into Web3, but obviously a Web3 focus. And at the same time, you're seeing slow adoption from early or verticals, very similar to what we've seen back in the day with the adoption of object storage. And that is, those are verticals where data is really important, where they're managing large data sets. So I'm talking about life sciences, research, media and entertainment. Yeah. These are like entities that, you know, they understand the value of their assets. They understand it's super important to have not only data integrity and protection, but also they're also the ones that are looking at how can I actually now monetize this by bundling new offerings and so on?
Yeah. And one final question here. So you're talking Web3. Do you see a day when data protection, and you came from the old days of backup and recovery with me, right? I have you a few years. I started in 99. So I think you said 2005 and you thought that was old. I'm not proud of that, but you know what? It's some great experience. And that was Y2K right around that time. And I started at IBM and I was completely green. I didn't know a thing. And this was way before the whole digital revolution really started. And I had books stacked up on my desk, user manuals, command guides, quick start guides. I mean, there were about 50 pounds worth of books I would have to take home. And they were all completely built on different operating systems. So this was an AIX book, a stack of books, and Unix and Solaris. And then you have one on Oracle databases. And yeah, it was the old days. But do you see, or maybe what's the future of data protection, and in particular backup and recovery? Is it a Web3 completely world, or is there maybe a mesh up of both?
I think it's a good point. I think what we're seeing right now is there's definitely like the organic growth. I mean, like those that are natively built onto a blockchain powered infrastructure, mm-hmm. they themselves, they need data protection. And so there's this whole ecosystem of applications and data management stacks like Akave, right? That is able to serve that need. It's still very small. It's not driving most of the capacity requirements. Okay. And then there are those that are looking at, those are like in the early stage adoption, right? They are looking at different business models. So first, they want to protect their data sets. There we're seeing some of those that are looking at a lower cost. And so they're more easily willing to, or they're more willing to make a shift as long as the experience is similar. But eventually, I think it's going to be a hybrid. It's going to be a hybrid where we don't see the cloud necessarily, at least not in the immediate term, like immediate future, being replaced. It's more augmented as data is growing. And there's a lack of, I think, you know, even now with storage, with HDDs, large HDDs, the lead times for large capacity drives is now increasing to a year. I just saw from the Seagate CEO, I think he just announced that last week.
Okay.
Which means, like, I've seen this story before. That means, you know, shortage, price hikes. Eventually, this, you know, makes users think twice about, should I continue to use the same infrastructure or should I look at an alternative? And so I think there's going to be this hybrid, just like we saw from on-premises to cloud. I think we're going to see, you know, a combination of it. And then across these, I think my hope is that, and my expectation is that even the traditional Web2 applications, as we know it today, like the data protection stacks and so on, they will eventually adopt decentralized storage stacks. And some of them are already in the process, but it's through an on-ramp. And so it's, they don't necessarily pull in all the benefits yet of blockchain powered storage networks, because you can do a lot more. And so what I mean by that is, like, one thing that is very unique is that your data becomes composable. And I know it's a big word, but composable means that you can actually start executing contracts, smart contracts, and you can actually compose, you know, or you can execute secure and verifiable transactions on top of your data. What's hot right now? You know, AI is hot. AI has a data problem.
Cooling.
It's cooling. That's right. which is probably good because it was too hot. But I think you're definitely seeing like this early, you know, hype, and there's a lot of infrastructure being purchased. You know, there's a lot of proof of concepts. People are tinkering, playing around with it. Now you just kind of see that slow down. And then as production environments start to develop or start to implement these production environments, they're going to look at reducing their cost. And so that's when we're going to see more adoption. But what's interesting with these AI workloads is that there's a few things. One is that there's not enough data to train, publicly at least, to train your LLMs. A lot of the data has been scraped or is, you know, being scraped for the last year and a half and made available. But there's now like more models or more networks and applications that are trying to connect some of the private data sets with, you know, third parties and try to exchange some of these data sets at a price, at a cost, basically. And so when you do that, you need a system that tracks who actually has access to it. And so you have to ensure that the distribution of the rewards or the distribution of the payouts, right, for actually using that data is accurately done. That's not an easy problem statement. It's complex. And so this is where, again, blockchain-powered storage helps, because one of the benefits you get is that you have full transparency on what data is stored and who has access to it. And so this is where Kavi comes in, because the first step is bring in your assets on chain, have full transparency and chain of custody, basically. Mm-hmm. So you have the full data provenance on chain, and then you can start building new business models around it where you may be charging users for accessing those data sets. But number one is always like, okay, how do I get my large data sets into a data lake before I can even do something with it?
Yeah, that's a great segue into wrapping things up. And I've learned quite a bit. I appreciate you taking some time out of your day to explain decentralized compute and talking a little bit about immutability and also blockchain and just kind of the future of where we're headed with Web3 and data protection. So Stefan, thank you so much for being a guest here. And before I let everyone go, I do want to call out the YouTube channel that we recently launched. We only have 50 plus subscribers, so please share this episode, send it out to your friends as well, and give us a thumbs up on YouTube. Head over to dataprotectiongumbo.com, and if you're on LinkedIn, we have the Backup and Recovery Professionals LinkedIn group, and that boasts about 26,000 professionals. So there's a lot of people there: cybersecurity, storage, backup, data protection, blockchain, compliance, regulations, and the list goes on. So Stefan, thank you again for being a guest on the show.
Thank you for having me.